Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 302, titled Walking with the Snake. That is a reference, of course, as veteran listeners will no doubt be aware of, to the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, which we're going to be revisiting in the second half of this program. It's a book published by National Vanguard Books that is one of the base points for this particular line of inquiry. We're going to revisit that directly, and we're going to discuss some aspects of the book or review some aspects and compare that with what's going on today. This broadcast is being recorded, by the way, on May 13th, of the year 2001. In the first half of the program, I want to review a couple of very important points, one of them being the background of one of the individuals chiefly involved with the creation of the World Trade Organization. That's a fellow named Robert Zoellick, last name Zoellick. Robert Zoellick was not only involved with the creation of the WTO in a big way, he also was the Bush State Department, that's George the First, George the Elder, the Bush State Department team that was involved with the reunification of Germany, working in that regard with Helmut Kohl's chief of staff, Günter Strassmayer, who was the chief architect of German reunification. As I'm speaking on May 13th of 2001, the Oklahoma City bombing is coming back into widespread view in a big way due to the fact that there were a bunch of documents that were mislaid, apparently, by the FBI, and that are now being reviewed by McVeigh's counsel and may shed some new light on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's a safe bet that that event, in which I definitely think Tim McVeigh was involved, was a lot more than simply two lone nuts. I think that the analysis of that has been inadequate all the way around. I think the authorship of that crime lay with the Underground Reich, including Andreas Strassmayer, the son of Günter Strassmayer, the architect of German reunification, and Helmut Kohl's chief of staff, also the grandson of one of the founding members of the Nazi Party in Germany. There was a very recent ruling by Michael Powell, Colin Powell's son, and this particular ruling is going to have a vast impact on telecommunications and media in the United States. I covered this in For the Record program number 299, and we're going to be revisiting that right now. The implications of this particular article, and once again I've dealt with this in number 299, couldn't be exaggerated, and I think by way of emphasis, and also perhaps for the benefit of people who did not hear number 299, we're going to be reviewing this particular program. We're going to be taking a look at an article that we're going to review this particular point of information, I should say. We're also going to be reviewing some aspects of For the Record program number 273 concerning Robert Zoellick and some of his other areas of involvement. Robert Zoellick is currently the U.S. Trade Representative and is a very, very important individual and a very interesting individual as well. He also was involved with the Florida recount. This article is from the Financial Times of Wednesday, May 2nd of the year 2001, and it deals with Deutsche Telekom's purchase of VoiceStream, an American mobile phone company. This particular ruling is significant not only because of the fact that Deutsche Telekom is controlled by the German government, but in particular, the FCC ruling not only allowed Deutsche Telekom to purchase VoiceStream, but it opened the door in a very significant way for corporations controlled by foreign governments to buy American telecommunications companies. We should note for the purposes of this broadcast that telecommunications would not only refer to mobile phone companies, but also to radio and television companies as well. RTL, Europe's largest broadcaster, now effectively controlled by Bertelsmann, is going to be moving into the U.S. Telecommunications market and buying American television stations if they have their way. And it would appear to me, at least from the context of this ruling, that the FCC is not going to stand in their way. Note now, in particular, just what the FCC ruled in connection with this case. Note the role of the WTO and understand that this particular ruling is not only going to permit Deutsche Telekom, again controlled by the German government, to buy American telecommunications companies, it will open up the door for companies controlled by foreign governments to buy other American telecommunications companies, and the only standard by which such potential purchases are going to be weighed concerns the public interest, unquote, clause or viewpoint of the WTO. Now, again, it is the WTO that is in many ways the yardstick for this particular FCC ruling, the implications of which couldn't be exaggerated. And for that reason, the very interesting background of Robert Zoellick, George Bush's trade representative, is going to be reviewed, excerpting some material from For the Record 273, which in turn accesses some material from number 186. The Financial Times of Wednesday, May 2nd of the year 2001, had the following article by Peter Spiegel in Washington. This is headlined, U.S. ruling on telecom could lead to wave of investment. Note the headline. It, in many ways, sums up the import of the program of the article, I should say. And note, once again, the role of the WTO as the yardstick by which the FCC has, or which guided the FCC in its ruling. Note also, later on in the program, Robert Zoellick's background, and he, in many ways, midwifed the birth of WTO. The importance of Deutsche Telekom's $24 billion takeover of VoiceStream, the American wireless provider, to U.S. regulators is probably best illustrated by how long the deal took to get final approval. The Federal Communications Commission's assent last week came more than 2 weeks after an initial deadline had passed, and the FCC's formal order issued on Friday only came after an additional 2 days of wrangling. The delay was because FCC officials implied last week Telecom's purchase of a U.S. phone license was a, quote, matter of first impression, unquote, the first time the commission had ruled on foreign government stakes in U.S. carriers, and the agency's new chairman, Michael Powell, was committed to produce a precedent-setting ruling. Although extended regulatory debates can frequently lead to documents full of mealy-mouthed bureaucraties, the 97-page order issued by the FCC is as sweeping and precedent-setting as Mr. Powell had wanted. It goes further than any previous ruling in the agency's 66-year history to open up the U.S. telecommunications market to foreign competitors. And by the way, we're going to, I will add supplementally, as we will see, that includes basically foreign governments. Continuing, quote, this is the green light. This is the paved road. This is the Autobahn, unquote, said Rudy Baca, BACA, an analyst of international telecoms communication, telecoms regulation with the Precursor Group. It's more definitive than most people expected, unquote. At the heart of the debate over the deal was a discrete section of the Communications Act that contained seemingly contradictory guidance on how to deal with foreign telecoms owned by their governments. One part of the law states flatly that no U.S. phone licenses can be held, quote, by any foreign government or representative thereof, unquote. But another section allows a company owned by a foreign government to buy the license if the FCC rules it in the public interest. The interpretation of the language is crucial since outside the United Kingdom, most big overseas telecommunications companies remain at least partially in the hands of governments. After the VoiceStream deal closes, for instance, Telecom will still be 45% owned by the German government. The same is the case for important international players such as France Telecom and Japan's NTT. By the way, I would add NTT is controlled by the Japanese government. It recently bought Vireo, an important internet provider. Continuing, in its telecom VoiceStream ruling, the FCC found the wording calling for an outright ban applies only if a foreign government itself tries to acquire a license, a highly unlikely scenario that, for all intents and purposes, makes the clause moot. Instead, all companies where a government owns a stake will be governed by the public interest waiver. In addition, the FCC went even further, saying that due to trade commitments, any purchase by a company from a WTO country will be assumed to be in the public interest, a clear sign that the agency has opened the floodgates. One more time. Instead, all companies where a government owns a stake will be governed by the public interest waiver. In addition, the FCC went even further, saying that due to trade commitments, any purchase by a company from a WTO country will be assumed to be in the public interest, a clear sign that the agency has opened the floodgates. Quote, The FCC has confirmed that it will be applying U.S. law to U.S. WTO commitments, and that is a critical ruling, unquote, said Scott Blake Harris, former head of the FCC's International Bureau who worked for VoiceStream in the deal. Analysts predict that the order could lead to a new wave of foreign investment, which could target even the largest U.S. carriers. The FCC's sweeping ruling, however, has incensed the deal's opponents, including Senator Ernest Hollings, who came within a hair's breadth of blocking the merger through legislation last year. He has vowed to reintroduce the bill this session and include a provision that would force the German government to sell most of its stake in telecom if it wanted to retain VoiceStream. Quote, "They basically rewrote the law," unquote, said one congressional critic. Again quoting, "They just changed 65 years of jurisprudence," unquote. Well, again, as I've noted in past discussion of this particular ruling, the implications of this are enormous. The fact that Deutsche Telekom only owns, is only 45%, or will be only owned by 45%, only 45% owned by the German government is meaningless. That still gives the German government a controlling interest, and I would also note that this purchase was made with greatly inflated stock. We've talked about that in, among other broadcasts. For the record, program number 245, Deutsche Telekom, Uber Alles. As indicated here, this will not only open the floodgates for foreign companies to buy U.S. telecommunications companies, including radio and TV companies, it will open the floodgates for foreign companies controlled by foreign governments to buy U.S. telecommunications companies. Just imagine the public outcry in this country if the U.S. government were buying telecommunications companies. You'd hear everybody from the left to the right screaming bloody murder, but nobody cares about this. Well, they just may come to change or to rue their relative disinterest under the circumstances. I would note in this regard that the lobbying for Deutsche Telekom was conducted by Wilmer Cutler and Pickering. That's the same law firm which is handling the legal work for not only Swiss banks being sued over holding on to the assets of Holocaust victims, but also German companies that are being sued over having used slave labor and in other Third Reich-related lawsuits. As I have also pointed out, the former treasurer of the CDU, Matthias Wissmann, a former German government transport minister, was hired by Wilmer Cutler and Pickering. The CDU is a major focal point now of the CDU funding scandal, which in turn overlaps a number of other areas of inquiry in this broadcast. I've talked about that in For the Record programs 193 and also in broadcast 276 and 278. I have speculated in the past, and I am increasingly convinced that that speculation was on the mark, that the finding of law on many of the Holocaust-related lawsuits had become a regulatory football, and a football in the entire area of globalization. I believe that in exchange for dropping their opposition to some aspects of these lawsuits, German corporations may very well have been entitled to expand their operations in this country, and perhaps in exchange for overlooking that, U.S. corporations may in turn be allowed to expand their operations in Europe. Again, this is speculative, but I believe I'm accurate in that speculation, and it'll be interesting to watch the globalization process proceed. We're now going to review some aspects of Robert Zoellick's background, and we're going to go to For the Record program number 186 and review some of the background of the man who has basically midwifed the birth of the WTO. What we're going to do now is to revisit a segment from For the Record program, another segment from For the Record program number 186, titled What Does the W in George W. Bush Stand For? This was recorded in late 1999, and we're going to take a look at an individual who was a key advisor to George W. during the campaign with regard to foreign policy. He is now U.S. Trade Representative, and this individual has a very, very, very interesting history indeed. The man's name is Robert Bruce Zoellick, and we talked about Zoellick and some of his interesting connections in For the Record program number 186. Reading now from the New York Times of Saturday, November 20th of 1999. This is a story by R.W. Apple, Jr., dateline Simi Valley, California, November 19th, and headlined, Bush Questions Aid to Moscow,
in a policy talk. He's basically, among other things, looking to cut off aid to Moscow, thereby weakening Moscow's attempts at putting the Wahhabi uprising on their southern border to rest, the uprising in Dagestan and Chechnya. Bear in mind that this is actually part of Russia. This is about Bush's foreign policy talk, and in this particular article, again from the New York Times of 11-2099, story by R.W. Apple Jr., there is a list of George Bush's foreign security or foreign policy advisors, most of whom had served in past administrations, and many had served with his father. There's a list of the various advisors, and one of them in particular I thought was worth noting. This is Robert Zoellick, Zoellick, of Harvard. This is a German-American, obviously, an American of German extraction. Robert Zoellick, Zoellick, of Harvard, Goldman Sachs, and the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Again, this from the New York Times of 11-2099, one of George Bush's key, George W. Bush's key foreign policy advisors, Robert Zoellick of Harvard, the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and Goldman Sachs. That's one of the top Bush foreign policy advisors. And one should note that he not only worked with Goldman Sachs, the investment house, but also is with not only Harvard University, but the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Now, that's an institution that you will see funding programming on the public broadcasting system. It also is an organization that was crafted in order to basically serve as a PR arm for the key German corporations that had backed Hitler, and it is, of course, thereby inevitably linked to the deadly Bormann Flight Capital organization about which I have spoken so often. We're going to turn again to the definitive text on the Bormann organization authored by Paul Manning, part of the CBS News team that covered World War II, along with Edward R. Murrow, a close colleague. Manning broadcast the surrenders of both Japan and Germany to the American people on the CBS radio network, and in order to cover the air war in Europe, trained as a waste gunner on a B-17. In order to cover the air war in Japan, he became a nose gunner on a B-29 because the aircraft could not carry journalists on air raids into enemy territory in case they got hit and had to limp back to base. They couldn't carry extra weight. So in order to cover those raids, a journalist had to become a combatant. Paul Manning then became a very heroic journalist in the post-war period as well, having provided us with the definitive text on the Bormann Flight Capital Organization. Now, of the creation of the German Marshall Fund of the United States, its role as a PR institution for corporate Germany, and its connections to Bormann and the Bormann Organization, Paul Manning writes as follows, bearing in mind that Robert Zoellick of Harvard University and Goldman Sachs is also of the German, works for the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Turning to Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart, copyright 1981, we read, by the 1970s, the West Germans had concluded that influencing U.S. public opinion is better accomplished with a skillful touch than with a meat cleaver, which had characterized their efforts during the two world wars. An example of such skill was the staged news event of June 5, 1972, when Willy Brandt announced at Harvard University that the Federal Republic of Germany would donate 150 million marks, or $47 million, to establish a foundation in the honor of the Marshall Plan, a statesmanlike approach to the recovery of former enemies and to the recovery generally of Western Europe. Brandt stated that the money would arrive in equal installments for the next 15 years for the establishment and operation in the United States of an independent, American-run educational foundation specializing in solutions to European problems to be known as the, quote, German Marshall Fund of the United States, unquote, a memorial to the Marshall Plan, unquote. The overriding function of this German George C. Marshall Research Foundation is public relations to cosmetize the German industrialists and bankers whose corporations had worked so successfully for the Third Reich. This sentence again, because it defines what the German Marshall Fund is. The overriding function of this German George C. Marshall Research Foundation is public relations to cosmetize the German industrialists and bankers whose corporations had worked so successfully for the Third Reich. In October of 1978, the Marshall Foundation was utilized as a platform for Dr. Hermann J. Abbs, now honorary president of Deutsche Bank AG, as he addressed a meeting of businessmen and bankers and members of the Foreign Policy Association in New York City on, quote, the problems and prospects of German-American economic cooperation, unquote. This luncheon meeting was chaired by his old friend, John J. McCloy, Wall Street banker and lawyer, who had worked closely with Dr. Abs when McCloy served as U.S. High Commissioner for Germany during those post-war Reconstruction years. At that time, Hermann Abs, as chief executive of Deutsche Bank, was also directing the spending of America's Marshall Plan money in West Germany as the chairman of the Reconstruction Loan Corporation of the Federal Republic of Germany. With them on the dais were Henry H. Fowler, Wall Street investment banker and former U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Cabot Lodge, former U.S. ambassador to the Federal Republic of Germany, George C. McGee, another former American ambassador to Germany, also a trustee of the Marshall Foundation, and a member of various private and government advisory groups. These, along with the others on the dais and in the audience, represent firms and banks that are among the most prestigious in the United States and throughout the world. All benefited from the rebirth and rebounding prosperity of the new Federal Republic of Germany. Knowingly or not, these figures and their corporations are indebted to the man who was not there, the financial and administrative genius who set the foundation for the post-war recovery of West Germany, Martin Bormann.
That, again, excerpted from For the Record program number 186. What does the W in George W. Bush stand for? Now, we're going to jump to the recent past, and specifically, we're going to take a look at an interesting element of Zoellick's background, again, Zoellick. This is from the New York Times of January 6th of the year 2001, an article titled Bush Seeking to Overhaul Policymaking, subtitled Trade Post and Others May Be Downgraded at State Line, Washington, January 5th. It's by Joseph Kahn and Frank Bruni, B-R-U-N-I. The post, by the way, was not downgraded. More about Robert Zoellick from this particular article, skipping down in the story, from New York Times, 1-6-2001, rather. Mr. Zoellick was a foreign policy wunderkind, interesting choice of words, under Mr. Baker. That's James Baker, the Secretary of State under George I. Speaking more about Zoellick, he helped design and carry out United States policy on German reunification a decade ago. He also helped start NAFTA negotiations from his post in the State Department. First of all, note that he was critical. He was actually the point man, as we're about to read, with regard to handling the reunification of Germany for the Bush State Department. That would place him on the American end of the negotiations with Günter Strassmeier, Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff and the father of Andreas Strassmeier, according to Carol Howe, an undercover informant for the ATF, who passed a lie detector test. On her testimony, Andreas Strassmeier was the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing, and Timothy McVeigh and company were his protégés. And Gunter Strassmeier's father, Andreas' grandfather, was one of the charter members of the Nazi Party in Germany. We took a look at that in, among other broadcasts, For the Record program number 235. That information is documented in, among other sources, Martin A. Lee's landmark book, The Beast Reawakens. I would note that the attorney for Andreas Strassmeier was Kirk Lyons, rather, one of the top Aryan Nations attorneys and a leading figure in the neo-Confederate movement, one of whose exponents is the Attorney General Designate in the United States, John Ashcroft. More about Robert before I proceed, please note also that Robert Zoellick was one of the people who midwived the NAFTA agreement. It was actually begun, negotiations for NAFTA, were begun under the Bush administration, although it actually passed during the Clinton years. More about Zoellick when he was finally confirmed as U.S. Trade Representative. This from the New York Times of Friday, January 12th of the year 2001. This is a profile of Robert Bruce Zoellick. It's by Joseph Kahn. Dateline, Washington, January 11th. And first of all, in his resume, which is summarized here, it says, fellow and board member, German Marshall Fund of the United States, 1999 through present. So he is still a member of the German Marshall Fund of the United States, in effect, a Bormann front group. Skipping down in this story, more about the career of Robert Zoellick. A confidant of former Secretary of State James A. Baker III, he rallied Western allies to back a speedy German reunification and finagled a compromise that led to the creation of the World Trade Organization. So, he was involved at the American end of speedy German reunification, along with Gunter Strassmayer, Andreas's father, on the German end. And he was instrumental in midwifing the creation of the World Trade Organization. So keep in mind that among his babies, in addition to German reunification, NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, the latter two having been actually realized during the Bill Clinton years, and with, by the way, Bill Clinton's support. Continuing and skipping down in this story, speaking of Zoellick, but he is most widely remembered in foreign policy circles for being the United States representative at the multi-party negotiation over the future of divided Germany. He persuaded the Bush administration to embrace German unity, despite the qualms of allies and alarm in the former Soviet Union. And I would point out that the leader of the German peace movement, who had much to do with allaying former Soviet public opinion, was Joschka Fischer, the current foreign minister of Germany, and an individual pushing for a subsuming of all European national interests into that of the German-dominated EU. More about that next week. And I would also note that, again, in addition to German reunification, opposed by Margaret Thatcher, by the way, Robert Zoellick helped to midwife, was instrumental in the realization of NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. Are we having fun yet? If not, listen to this. This from the Los Angeles Times of Friday, January 12th of the year 2001. Another story, Dateline Washington, headlined, Bush's trade chief rated as smart, smooth negotiator. It's by Jonathan Peterson, an LA Times writer. Skipping down of Zoellick, we read, he is a protege of James A. Baker III, the longtime Republican official. Both traveled to Florida to help George W. Bush during the recent ballot recount controversy. So another thing, on the critical thing on Zoellick's resume, he was instrumental in the Florida recount, basically a key player apparently in the electoral coup of the year 2000. More commentary about Zoellick, this coming from the Financial Times of Friday, January 12th of the year 2001. This is a story by Edward Alden, A-L-D-E-N, Richard Wolff, W-O-L-F-F-E, and Stephen Fidler, F-I-D-L-E-R, in Washington. Headline, Zoellick faces task of building trade bridges. And skipping down, or the subheaded, U.S. Trade Representative. Challenges include growing dissent over globalization and embittered relations between the U.S. and Europe. And by the way, Zoellick, not surprisingly, is a favor of globalization. Skipping down, the appointment will be greeted favorably in Europe, where Mr. Zoellick has strong contacts in both government and business. He was one of a handful of Bush advisors that a senior EU delegation sought out last month when they visited Washington. And I don't doubt that one bit, by the way. Obviously, an easing of trade barriers will greatly aid not only Germany, but the Bormann Organization. And we're going to take a look next week at an update on German corporate control of American media. And we're going to take a look at some very interesting things happening in the EU, particularly with regard to trade. That again from For the Record program number 273. That broadcast is titled, B as in Bush, B as in Bormann. You also heard For the Record program 186 excerpted in that program. The various programs that I've done over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. You can visit their website at spitfirelist.com or write to them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Real audio archives of the For the Record programs are being compiled by WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. You can visit their website at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are being archived on a website, archive.wfmu.org/archive/D-X/. There are links to both sites in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. An annotated and detailed description of For the Record program number 302 will be available in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. That concludes side A of For the Record program number 302, Walkin' with the Snake, being recorded on May 13th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.